Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wind swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
We have arrived to Friday, and we've got a full two-hour edition of our Graybar Sports Open Line tonight here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Fantastic to be with you tonight, taking you until 8 o'clock. We've got a lot on the program. Bernie Miklas is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. We are going to be joined by SIUE men's basketball coach Brian Barone later on this hour. They've got a huge game coming up tomorrow in Edwardsville. Next hour is our weekly conversation with our guy Kevin Wheeler when we kind of do the Gas House Gang on the radio. Kevin and I don't have a scheduled day where we do the Gas House Gang together. I have a day where we do it, all four of us, with Bernie and Tom and Kevin. And then my other 2 days, on Wednesdays, I do it with Tom Ackerman. And on Fridays, with Bernie Miklas. So we don't have a Matt and Kevin day scheduled on the Gas House Gang. So we make up for that by talking baseball for 15, 20 minutes every Friday night here on KMOX. So that's what we do. As always, you are more than welcome to chime in on anything that we are talking about. Call, text, tweet, voice message. Those are the ways to connect with the program. If you call or text, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. If you tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air, or if you're listening on the Odyssey app, you can go ahead and just leave a voicemail message, and our voice message. It's not voicemail. It's a voice message, and that gets into us as well. So that's all the ways to get connected with the program. Something that we are just watching on MLB Network right now, they are counting down the top 100 prospects in all of Major League Baseball. And so far, they've gone through the top 40. They're counting from 100 to 1, so they've gone through 60. They're up until about 40 right now, and the Cardinals have so far two players on the list. Tink Hintz comes in at number 77, and then Quinn Matthews comes in at number 45. So when that gets done for the day, we'll certainly tell you we would expect at least one more Cardinal to end up on there before all is said and done. It's been an interesting week because we had so much, information and narratives to talk through coming out of winter warm-up weekend last weekend, where obviously everybody said something and we just had a lot to go through. And then it's been just a quiet week when it comes to the Cardinals. And I do think that, look, we're not that far out from pitchers and catchers reporting. We're about 3 weeks away from that, which is crazy. It's crazy. We're almost there. I believe the pitchers and catchers report date is either the 11th or the 12th. I think it's the 11th. First workout is the 12th. I could be off a day on that, but it's coming up in just a few weeks. I'm heading down to Jupiter on that Monday, the 10th, the day after the Super Bowl. So here we are. It's conference championship weekend in the NFL, and essentially, the moment the Super Bowl is over, that's when baseball starts up with spring training camps getting underway. We are just about there. And I don't think this roster is complete. I don't think this roster looks the way it's going to look on that pitchers and catchers report day. I've come back around, and I'm jumping back and forth. I'm not the type of guy that talks out of both sides of my mouth. Generally, I take a stance and I kind of go with it. I think the Cardinals are going to trade Nolan Arenado. I don't think that they go to camp with him on the roster. Could I be wrong on that? Yeah. And last week, if you would have asked me that, I would have said maybe it's 50-50, maybe even less than 50-50. The more I think about it, and that's the problem, I'm thinking about it too much. I need to stop thinking. It's the first thing you do. Stop thinking. But the more I think about it, why would John Mozeliak go and say at winter warmup that, you know, plans 1, 2, and 3, or however, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, whatever, however he said it. Why would he say is to move Arenado? Why would he say that if he didn't continue to have a pretty good feeling that they're going to get a deal done? So I think there's a possibility. I don't know, maybe this is a conspiracy theory more than anything else at this point. I think what's holding it up is the Bregman thing. We'll see where he goes. I'm hearing more stuff on this Bregman thing. Reportedly, the Cubs are starting to get on and on, and that'd be terrible. That'd be terrible. I don't think the Cubs are an especially impressive team right now at 6:13 p.m. on Friday, January 24th of 2025. They might be the best team in the NL Central right now, but that doesn't mean they're an impressive team. If they add Alex Bregman, that changes. All of a sudden, with that on paper, they become the best team in the NL Central if they make that move. They're also in on Presley. So if they have Presley and Bregman, well, to me, at that point, they become the overwhelming favorite in the NL Central. Right now, they just might be the favorite in the Central. But if you add a Bregman and also a Presley, if they just add Presley, like, that's a nice addition, but it's not a game-changing, great, okay, this is really going to change the fortunes of the team type addition. And look, I'm in St. Louis. I'm not in Chicago. So I don't have this everyday reactions to what's going on. But my belief had always been that the Cubs had another one or two fairly large splashes left in them before this offseason came to an end. But then Ricketts opens up his mouth at Cubs convention and is sitting here saying, "Oh, we're just trying not to lose money. That's all we're trying to do here in Chicago. We're just trying not to lose money." Meanwhile, you've got some of the highest revenues in all of Major League Baseball, and you spend a lower percentage of that than almost all baseball teams out there. But don't let facts get in the way of a good story. So when Ricketts is going out there going, "Oh, we're just trying not to lose money," at that point, I'm okay, maybe they're done. Maybe they did the Tucker thing and they're done. And then we hear about Bregman. I don't know. It's the Bregman deal just needs to get done. I'm so sick of talking about this. I am so sick of talking about the Arenado thing. And I know I brought it up. It's my show. Nobody's, you know, twisting my arm on what I have to talk about. But I'm ready for the Bregman thing to be done with, because once that's done with, then whatever market there is for Nolan Arenado is going to present itself. Because right now the market can't present itself, because I'm sure half the teams or all the teams that are interested in him are also still holding out hope that maybe Bregman can be with them this year. So that's where we're at. Not a whole lot has changed, really, as we've moved forward. Bernie Miklas is going to join us coming up in just a moment or so. Don't go anywhere. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. We're about to talk with Bernie Miklas. Our conversation brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. Of course, you can check out Bernie's YouTube channel at The Bernie Show, where he does 1 to 2 videos a day going deep on various topics. And he's part of the Gas House Gang. It was him and I today. You're getting a lot of Bernie today, which is great, very, very good, because you heard him with the DGS earlier. We did Gas House Gang today, and then that's going to re-air coming up later on. But he does join us here on Sports Open Line. Bernie, always great to talk to you. Thanks for taking some time for us.
Yeah, well, always great to work with you. And gosh, I hope that the audience isn't suffering from some Bernie fatigue.
No such thing.
I thought I'd be doing like nice little part-time thing, and I'm on the air gabbing all the time, but I say that with a smile on my face. I love it. I love working with y'all. I really do.
Yeah, well, we love having you around. I'll be on. I've not watched the video that you posted about 5 hours ago. Your videos are generally part of my late evening or early morning routine, but I saw the headline, Arenado Buzz. So what's without giving it all away, what was your Arenado takeaway today?
I'm happy to give the most of it away. And by the way, I want to preface this, as I kind of did in the video, by saying this isn't any kind of breaking news, and I'm not like, "Oh, I have a scoop." It's nothing like that. But the situation has been so quiet and just seems like nothing is moving. There's at least some buzz swirling. At least it was at the time that I recorded the video. And the buzz is this: Alex Bregman, unless something's changed in the last few hours, seriously. So if it has, we have nothing to talk about. But Alex Bregman, according to multiple reports, including from Chandler Rome, who covers the Astros for The Athletic, and he's very good. Alex Bregman and the Astros have sort of reopened the door to him coming back there. And, you know, Scott Boras is still going to try to squeeze what he can out of Boston and Detroit, the other teams in the contest here. But Jose Altuve has been, and other players have been, pleading with Jim Crane, the Astros owner. Said, this guy is a huge part of our team, our culture. He's a leader. He sets the tone. He's we need him. You know, we need him. Please, please get him. Bring him back. So according to Chandler Rome, The Athletic, the Bregman deal that Jim Crane offered, quite a while back in the offseason, it was 5 years or 6 years, $156 million, I think, or $153 million, I think. That's still on the table, which surprises me because I thought, no, they pivoted and that's it. So obviously, if there's a shot that Bregman will indeed return to Houston, well, I think, needless to say, that makes it a lot more likely that Arenado would be traded to the Boston Red Sox. They miss out on Bregman. They have urgency to clean up their defense on the infield because they have a ground ball pitching staff. They think Arenado can help them there. Obviously, they also think the ballpark will help him. He'll be rejuvenated, and they really need a right-handed bat. So I'm just saying it's swirling a little bit. It hasn't been swirling for a while, which is why I wanted to do a video on it. So if Boston's got urgency to get a deal done, if it comes to that, if Bregman goes back to Houston, I guess my question to you is, will John Mozeliak and the Cardinals find a way to get it done? I mean, will this be something that they'll just say, okay, this is as close as we will ever have it. Let's get this thing done, even if maybe some of the stuff involved in it, like eating a lot of money, wasn't something they wanted to do. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing because if he ends up with Houston, then the Boston thing should be able to happen. Here's my side of it, though. If let's say he goes to Boston and Jose Altuve has already openly talked about going to left field, which would then push Paredes to second, and that would allow third base to open up. Now that the Astros have Walker, would Arenado feel differently about Houston that they could re-engage with the Astros as well? So if he goes to the Astros, does Boston become a thing? If he goes to the Red Sox, do the Astros reopen? That's what we're doing right now, Bernie. This is where we're at, that we're trying to go through all these different scenarios. And I do think he's going to get moved before the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a good point. I mean, from what I understand, my friends in the media in Houston, and a couple of them are really, really wired in. Jim Crane was furious when Arenado vetoed the trade. He was furious. That's why they pivoted immediately. When Arenado's camp started to, in effect, spread the message that, well, it's just too soon. It's not that we don't want to go to Houston. We just don't want to rush into anything. And that just set Jim Crane off, and he's kind of a tempestuous guy. And so impulsively, he's like, baloney to that. Let's go get Christian Walker. I'm not wasting any more time with this guy. So I guess I'd be surprised if they approached Arenado again. Listen, who knows, right? Yeah. And I would think maybe he'd be more open to the idea of going to Houston. So we'll have to – Bregman still is – going to, in effect, control the flow of this and control what happens to Nolan Arenado more than any other factor.
My new talking point on this is, Mo said at the winter meetings, we intend to trade Arenado. We later found out, he told us here at KMOX, I thought I had a deal done when I said that. I may not have said that if I knew then what I know now. But then we fast forward to the winter meet or to the winter warm-up, and he goes on the stage and he says, right now, goal number 1, 2, and 3 is to trade Arenado. So he went from saying that maybe he wouldn't have said what he said at the winter meetings if he knew now, but then he kind of doubles down on that at winter warmup. And all I can think is there's a really good possibility, Bernie, that he's very confident that once the Bregman thing works itself out, that there's going to be an opportunity to trade Arenado.
Well, I would hope so. And one thing that I got into the video is also, if Arenado comes back, he comes back, right? I uh, I don't know that I've been unfair to him. I wouldn't. I hope I wasn't. But, you know, it's easy to kind of express some exasperation because of the fact he vetoed the deal. And, you know, that would have been his ticket out of town. And now the Cardinals might have to welcome him back and it'll be awkward. And they can't play Gorman at third, which means the infield's more crowded because Gorman's back at second. And Sejacy might get boxed out. And, you know, Donovan might have to move to the outfield. I mean, there's just – it's got so many ramifications. But the one thing I've picked up on, and I'm not knocking anybody at all. You know, I don't want to be accused of, like, you know, like bashing fans or whatever. Not at all. I'm talking about my own feelings on this. You know, Arenado hasn't done anything wrong. You know, the Cardinals went to him. They went to Contreras. They went to Gray. They said, listen, you have no trade clauses, but here's what we're going to do. You know, should we look for a deal? Do you want to stay? Would you prefer to leave? We respect you guys. Well, those two said they wanted to stay. That doesn't mean that Arenado was obligated to say, oh, no, I want to stay. The Cardinals called him. He didn't call them. And he was like, well, the way Mozeliak and the agent and Mozeliak all talk about it, the agent talks about this too. It isn't that Arenado wants to get out of here. It's just like, you know, the clock's running on his career. And if he has a chance to land with a contender, he should at least consider it. And that's right. That's rightfully so. Now, maybe it didn't work out the way he wanted to, as fast as he wanted to. But I don't want to demonize Nolan Arenado. He really has done nothing wrong in any of this. If anything has gone wrong, maybe it's because maybe we can say he shouldn't have vetoed the Astros trade. But that's not to rip him. That's just retrospect. That's hindsight. If he doesn't move, I think he'll come back and he'll be a pro. And I think if anything, it might bring out a better part of him. Will he realize, hey, we got young guys, I'm on board. I want to be more proactive about helping those guys. So anyway, I didn't mean to drag on about that, but I wanted to kind of air that part of it. It's just kind of like I'm making sure that I'm trying to be really fair to Nolan Arenado.
Last thing for you, kind of outside the box. Are you all surprised? Last year was not a great offseason for Scott Boras, and the same thing that's happening this offseason with a lot of guys that were signed at the very last minute and maybe didn't get the deals that they wanted, and Boras even lost some clients as a result of it. And it felt like the Boras clients were maybe going to have a different offseason this year where there's going to be more pressure on him to get deals done early. And here we are with Bregman and Alonso. We're 2 weeks from pitchers and catchers reporting, and these guys don't have deals done. Are you surprised at all that it's somewhat of a repeat of last year?
Yeah, to an extent I am because, you know, Boras is Boras, and he's not a guy that, you know, he's supremely confident. He's very aggressive and controlling, and he's going to make deals on his terms. And his clients almost always trust him. They may a couple times it's gone wrong, as you pointed out. But just because he has one bad experience where, you know, he didn't get what he wanted for his clients last winter, and, you know, Jordan Montgomery, for one, dropped him and, you know, said some nasty things about it. Boras is not the type of guy that's going to kind of go and retreat and say, well, I'll be a nicer guy next time around. No, he's still going to push to get the best for his clients. Bregman's a really smart guy. I don't know about Alonso and whether he still has, you know, supreme confidence in Boras, but they obviously still trust him, or they would have agreed to settle for something else along the way. So, but yeah, it could be a situation where this drags on longer. And it's going to be more stories longer than anybody expected. And there'll be more stories written by Ken Rosenthal and everybody else about, like, well, you know, Boras has had some strikeouts. What's up with that? You know, so it's something that's pretty interesting. It's like a sidebar to all this.
You can always tell which insiders have which relationships with which agents based off the narratives that come out from various reporters.
Well, if you want to know what's going on with, I tell you what, you know, everybody knows this, and I'm not taking a shot because everybody knows this. If you want to know what's going on, or you want to be the first to know what's going on with Bregman and any team, you just follow John Heyman on X.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, just do it, because he always gets the word first when it has anything to do with a Boras client.
100%. And by you're right. It's like they're doing their job. Their job is to create relationships with people that can give them inside information. Sure. Just kind of the negative side of that is sometimes it's a very transactional relationship. So there's going to be times where you probably have to go do something for the agent too.
That's right. You know, and I've known John forever, and I consider him a friend, and have always enjoyed the way he goes about his work. But that's the fun part. It's like, I don't think anyone even tries to conceal the fact that Boris feeds him stuff, right?
Yeah.
And Heyman's got a heck of a lot of scoops, a lot of number of scoops because of that relationship. So it's worked for him.
100%. Bernie Miklas is brought to us by Saliga Heating and Cooling. More on that in a moment, but do want to remind you again, subscribe to his YouTube channel at The Bernie Show. While you're doing that, subscribe to KMOX Sports so you can get the Gas House Gang every day. But Bernie, before we let you go, tell us a little bit about Saliga Heating and Cooling.
I would love to do it. You know, we've been a Saliga family for 16 years. This proud independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer has been taking care of St. Louis family since 1927. I mean, that speaks for itself right there. They're coming up on 100 years, and they're still going strong. They're still thriving. They're still growing. They're still adding families after taking care of generations of St. Louis families. They have an impeccable reputation for their professionalism, their knowledge, their classiness, and their honesty. I can tell you in 16 years, and a lot of those years were had nothing to do with me talking about them on the radio. This is me as a customer. There were times where we weren't sure what we were in for with a repair job, and we weren't sure if we're going to have a big bill or have to buy a big piece of equipment. Saliga always did everything they could, and they will always do everything they can to save you money by finding it by a less expensive solution. They're honorable. I mean, the integrity is a big thing in the heating and air conditioning business. So you can trust them. Take it from me. You can trust them. Financing options are available, subject to credit approval. Take a look around on their site at the Priority Club, which is a maintenance plan. It works great. And of course, they have American Standard equipment. So you can call 314-481-7333, but that phone number and all the other information of their services is available for you at Saliga Heating and Cooling. com. Have a great weekend, everyone.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. If you have not been paying attention, one of the really good basketball stories in our area here, especially recently, has been what the SIUE men's basketball team is doing. Since the calendar turned to 2025, they have won 6 of their last 7, and they've got a huge game against OVC first place Morehead State at home at First Community Arena coming up tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. To talk a little bit about his program, we're very happy to welcome onto the show. He is the head coach of the SIUE Women's basketball team. He's Coach Brian Baroni. Coach, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
I appreciate it. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So yesterday you guys pick up a nice win at home against Southern Indiana, 82-76. As I mentioned a moment ago, won 6 of 7 so far in 2025. What's really clicked in for your team here over the last few weeks?
I think, well, you know, one of the things that our guys have done a good job of is they've really they battled through some adversity and continued to pour into ourselves. You know, we've had a lot of injuries and a bunch of different lineups. And I think one of the things that they figured out was we didn't like how we went into the Christmas break, 0-2 in conference. We came back and responded the right way because we poured into ourselves. And we've had a lot of changes, you know, like in terms of roster. And I think we just kind of bought into the fact that, all right, whatever's going to be thrown at us, we have what it takes as long as we completely buy into each other.
Can you speak to the weight lifting off your shoulders when maybe non-conference doesn't go completely the way you would like it to go, but then once you get into conference play, how it really feels like it's a brand new season?
Yeah, you know, it's just it's funny because what you try to do is you try to you know, foresee what's going to happen in conference based on your non-conference schedule. So we do a bunch of different things in the scheduling where you might play a Thursday Saturday game or we played Indiana and then a day off and then Illinois. Now, obviously those are, you know, some two, you know, blue blood programs, but that simulates what we're going to face in conference. We also had a stretch where we played on a Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday. And we, you know, simulated that when we played Indiana State, Canisius, and Western Michigan in a, you know, five-day stretch. So what we've tried to do is try to, you know, put out the blueprint that we're going to see in conference. And we had a good non-conference. I think we might have been 7-4 or something like that. And I think it's really paid off in terms of there's been a lot of things that we've been able to reference that we've already been through. And then we have some good players and veterans that have been with me for a while too. So that's been huge with their leadership.
You mentioned those good players, and it starts with Rayshon Taylor. He's the league leading scorer. He's almost at 19 points per game. He scored 20 or more, I believe, in his last four games. But this guy is somebody that maybe here in St. Louis we should be talking about more as one of the really good college basketball players in the area, because these numbers he's putting up are pretty darn impressive.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he's one of their own. You know, this Metro East community, the community needs to see it and kind of appreciate it, just in terms, and a lot of people here do appreciate it, but it's always nice to support someone who's been here, grew up here, who had an unbelievable career at Collinsville, graduates in 4 years the right way, is, you know, almost done with his master's, been here 5 years, you know, in a day and age where it's very rare at the caliber player that he is. And, you know, I think when you have an opportunity to support somebody that isn't just good at basketball, but a lot of the qualities as a person that, you know, you want your community to be known for, that's something to cherish, especially this day and age in college sports.
How do programs like yours get players like Rayshon Taylor, who are really good but are willing to stick around and not look around in the transfer portal and the NIL market and all those things?
Well, I think, you know, when originally getting a guy like Ray, you know, it was a little before this time. But I do think that you identify people that are going to fit your culture and whatever your culture is. And, you know, I got the job on an interim basis. You know, I was going to be a year, 2 year coach, and had to, you know, I was fortunate to be able to be evaluated and, you know, given a little bit more time. And you pour into the people that are like you, the people that are about what you're about. And I think that allowed me to have time with a guy like Ray, like Des Polk, with Shamar Lamar Wright, previously, who'd been here for 5 years. And I think when you have time with somebody and they appreciate the culture that we collectively build together, then that investment into their themselves, their family, the things that are not necessarily just financial, become of higher value. And then you get the right kind of person that puts value on things that go beyond stuff. And I think that's one of the things that we've really tried to do a good job of here. And you also address the elephant in the room. You have those conversations. And it's been fortunate for us because we've been growing over these last several years. We've had some success, but it's not just because of myself and the staff. It's because of the players that we've been able to surround ourselves with.
SIUE men's basketball coach Brian Baroni continuing to join us. As mentioned, tomorrow, 3:30 in the afternoon at home. You've got a huge game coming up against the first place team in the league, Morehead State. They're 8-1 in conference. You're tied for second in wins, tied for third overall in the league at 6-3. I'm sure you would love to have a huge crowd for a huge game tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, it would be amazing to have that place filled. You know, this place is gotten better. I think we're 20-3 over the last, you know, couple of years at home. We've created an atmosphere and we put a product out there that I'd like to think that our community supports and in the right kind of way as well. And you know, you're talking about halfway through the conference season. This is our 10th game. It's a 20 game season. And if you can put yourself in position on the, you know, to go into the turn at ultimately what would be, I guess, you know, second place, you know, in the first 10 games, that's something that hasn't been done here before. And it hasn't been done here before, but it could be done and we could do it together. So it would be, you know, we want everyone to come out. You know, we want them to stand up. We want them to learn how to cheer for the guys that have been here several years. And be loud and you know, just enjoy a college basketball game in the right kind of atmosphere that we've put on here with our administration and our guys on the court. We're excited to have this opportunity tomorrow.
Not only is Morehead State having won 5 in a row, they've won 10 of their last 11. They've got some pretty impressive wins on their resume so far. How much of a challenge is this game going to be tomorrow?
Oh, it's going to be tough. I mean, we've always had games against Morehead State over these last 5 years that have been very, you know, kind of, you know, back and forth. You know, we got them last year at our place. They got us at their place last year. It's always been a tough game. We've had a lot of the same guys, and that's one of the things too. Like, we have a lot of the same guys, so there's kind of a traditional rivalry or matchup that these guys know each other. Morehead has done a good job historically with some of their retention when. And their new coach right now was an assistant there several years ago. Great person. So I think one of the things about tomorrow is we know each other. We know what because we've seen each other before, and it's going to be a tough one. 10 out of 11. They're 8-1 in conference. They're a tough team. And it's why we play. It'll be a good time.
If you've never checked out an SIUE basketball game, you might as well try it out tomorrow. First Community Arena, it's going to be a 3:30 tip-off against first-place Morehead State. Coach, thanks so much for taking some time. Best of luck to you, and I'm sure we'll talk again down the line.
I really appreciate it. It means the world that you took the time for me and to talk about our program. I'm really proud of it and honored to be their coach.
That's Brian Baroni. He is the head coach of the SIUE men's basketball team. Again, they're on a really good run right now, having won most of their games, all but one of their games since the calendar turned over to 2025. And that's a big one tomorrow. We'll see. He talked about the importance of winning on your home floor. You've got the first place team in Edwardsville tomorrow afternoon. And I know they're really hoping for a good crowd at First Community Arena. Really great. You could turn tomorrow into quite the day from a college basketball standpoint, if you are looking to do just that, because the Billikens, they're on the road, but they play at 1 o'clock, so you can sit and you can listen to the Billikens here on KMOX. That game's going to wrap up, and then you just head right in and you watch SIUE, and it all works out perfectly for you to have yourself a little bit of a college basketball doubleheader coming up tomorrow. We'll take a break and come back, wrap up hour number one of the show. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
All right, let me apologize before I even start this segment, because we're going to go somewhere where we're talking about a great St. Louisan, and he's going to get dragged through the mud on this one, and I'm not trying to just destroy the guy. I'm really not, but this just came across my Twitter feed. And I'm kind of blown away. The Chicago White Sox are going to erect a statue of Mark Burley, and it is going to go up on July 11th. Bob Nightingale tweeting that out. I assume the White Sox have announced it. Look, I like Mark Burley a lot. The no-hitter he threw is, to me, I don't know if there is a more memorable no-hitter than his, that catch that was made. What was the outfielder's name who made the catch?
Jermaine Dye.
It was Jermaine Dye, wasn't it?
No.
Hold on.
Am I getting my White Sox outfielders confused?
Yeah, catch Mark Burley, no-hitter. Hold on, who was it? I can't think of the guy's name. Anyways,
Oh, it was Dwayne Wise.
Dwayne Wise. There we go. Thank you. I remember I was so, at that point in time, I was the broadcaster for the Burlington Bees, which was a single A team in the Midwest League. It was the Royals affiliate at the time. And both Burley and Wise had played for the Bees previously in their careers. And I remember vividly, like, sitting in the conference room at our dinky little ballpark in Burlington, Iowa, watching that play out. Like, I've always really appreciated Mark Burley. That's why I feel bad talking about this, because I really, really like Mark Burley. We were discussing him earlier, yesterday, the day before, because of the numbers that he was able to get in terms of a Hall of Fame voting. He's not a Hall of Famer. But he had a nice career. But you're not supposed to build statues for guys who have nice careers. Like that, there's nothing that can more epitomize who the Chicago White Sox are, that they are erecting a statue of a Mark Burley. And I hate those words coming out of my mouth, because it sounds like I'm going off on the guy. That's not what I'm doing. But Mark Burley, Kyle Sixta, getting a statue. Yeah, it's good for him.
It is. It's pretty crazy, though. Normally, you see the top tier players getting statues. And I mean, he was really good through 200 innings, like we were talking about every year. But he never had an, I'm looking at his stats right now, he never had an ERA under three. Like, I mean, he was just consistently good, I guess.
He got Cy Young votes, what, 1 year?
1 year. He finished fifth.
Yeah. 1 year he got Cy Young votes. I feel like I'm on the other side of an arbitration hearing where I'm a team trying to tell a guy how bad he is. Like, he wasn't bad. I saw that. I went, a statue? Unless, is it a statue commemorating the no-hitter? Like, that would be one thing.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. One for the perfect game.
Right. Like, that would be something. Like, this, we are going to build a statue. But if you're going to do that, you got to have Wise in there. Like, it can't just be Mark Burley. So I don't know. I just saw that and I was a little bit surprised. I was on Nightingale's Twitter account because I wanted to get the latest on this thing going on. It looks like, it's not official yet, it looks like the Cubs are going to get Ryan Pressly from the Astros. And there are some implications that go along with that. First off, they got to figure out if you're getting traded from a team that's in Texas to a team that's in Illinois, you go from having no state taxes to having lots of state taxes. So Pressly is essentially taking a pay cut by doing that. Now there's some conflicting reports in there saying that the Tigers are trying to come in at the very last second before a deal gets done with the Cubs. I'd be fine with that. He would look great as a Detroit Tiger.
He really would.
He would, man. You know what? That Ryan Pressly, he would. I think he would look really, really good as a Detroit Tiger. So he's got a no trade clause. He shouldn't waive the no trade for the Cubs. He doesn't want to go there. He wants to go to Detroit possibly. But yeah, there's just a few things that are out there. Bruce Levine, who covers the Cubs, does a great job doing it for 670 The Score. He had tweeted out, Cubs getting close on obtaining Astros Ryan Pressly. Technical issues on contract and family accessibility, all resolvable issues. What is family accessibility? Like, you have to fly my family to Chicago whenever I ask, or family has to have access. I don't even know what that means, but that's what they said. So there's things that are happening. There's been some talk that the Astros are more willing to maybe push the Alex Bregman contract a little bit if they move on from Pressly, because they would have a few more dollars available if that happens. I don't know how true that is or not, but they're just things are happening right now. Things seem to be happening. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. We are going to break for our 7 o'clock news, and then we'll be back. Next hour includes a conversation with Kevin Wheeler, and I'm upset about something involving high school basketball in the area. I'll explain that as well coming up on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we roll on. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. 1 hour down, one more to go. Our good friend Kevin Wheeler, former host of this very program, now part of the Dave Glover Show. He joins us for our weekly Friday conversation in about 20 minutes or so, 20, 25 minutes. So he'll be with us. And then I'm going to discuss something later on this hour, and I like to discuss things where I have all the information, because I think when you talk about things that you don't know a lot about, sometimes you don't sound so smart. That being said, I'm just going to go all in. And I read today over at STL Today that Vashon High School is not going to allow full attendance at basketball games for safety reasons. And I've got some strong thoughts on that, and I'll share those with you coming up later on this hour. I've been thinking about this a fair amount recently. So I am as bullish as I think you can, like, potentially be without being, like, out of your mind on the Cardinals' chances of being better than we think that a lot of people think they're going to be this year. I have a positive attitude about them. I do think there's a good chance that Jordan Walker takes a step forward. I do think there's a good chance that Nolan Gorman takes a step forward. I'm not crazy. I leave open the possibility for that not happening. And if those things do not happen, it could go bad and go bad quickly. That's on the table. So I'm not this, like, crazy, irrational person that's just trying to make everything look amazing and wonderful. There is a very legitimate scenario that could play out where things just do not go well. I don't think it's going to play that way out. Again, if it does, I'm not going to be shocked by it. I think it's going to be better than most of us, than a lot of people think it's going to be. But this is where that conversation leads me. Because I think internally the Cardinals believe the same thing. And they have said publicly that, you know, well, the idea of we're going to be better than people think we're going to be. Okay. But that's kind of as strong as it's gone. Yeah, they have not really set high expectations. And rightfully so, because, again, there is a very viable path towards things going very poorly for the team. And I'm not running away from that whatsoever. But I think they probably think the way I think, that, you know what, there's a good chance that you're going to get more from Walker. You're going to get more from Gorman. There's going to be value in them being in the lineup every single day. There's going to be value in the work that they've already done with Brant Brown, that these things are going to end up being good. That starting pitching is going to be solid with a nice 1-2-3 of Gray and Fetty and Pallante. And we'll see what ends up going after that. But here's my question that I have been internally debating. Because the team, earlier in the offseason when we were talking about, you know, reset, reboot, whatever, reword, any reword other than rebuild, that's the word that was never used. Ever since that happened, there's been a lot of discussion about giving the kids runway and opportunities for younger players. In reality, even if they trade Nolan Arenado, which I think they will, even if they trade him, Where is really the opportunity for like super young players to get a huge opportunity at the big league level? Nolan Gorman's been a big leaguer for a few years. Even Jordan Walker has big league time each of the last 2 years. Now, they're still very young players, especially Walker. I'm not trying to tell you that they're not, but it's not like you're going to have these guys who are coming up from AAA making their major league debut and you're just going to hand them a starting job. That's not what's happening. In many ways, from a position player standpoint, it's not going to look a whole lot different than it's looked previously. If you move Arenado, you're going to get some more time with Sajacy in there. Obviously, the catching situation with Páez and Herrera, but that's what the catching situation was much of last year, as Wilson Contreras was injured. So that doesn't really change from last year, except now that's the plan, and last year it was the necessity. So where does this reset go in terms of impacting the major league team? And this is what I've been thinking about a lot lately. And what I'm curious about on the way that the Cardinals are mentally preparing for some possible scenarios to play out this year. And how they play, their win-loss record, their ability to stay in contention for a playoff spot, it absolutely does impact this. So it's hard for me to even venture a guess on what they would do, because it is, I think, so largely dependent upon some you know, external factors as well. But what if Quinn Matthews is awesome for the first month of the season at Memphis? We're talking 2.5 ERA. And maybe first couple months, you get past that June 1st date where you're able to, you know, get the club control for an extra year and all that sort of stuff that, you know, teams like to be able to finagle with. And you get through there. And all at the same time, Miles Michaelis is pitching to his 5 ERA that he's pitched to the last couple years. You're not trading Michaelis. He's got a no trade clause. He's not gonna, you know, get rid of it. Is the organization going to be at a point where even, you know, what's he, like $17.5 million? I don't have the contract. It's a lot of money. Miles Michaelis is owed a lot of money. Are they going to be able to, on June 1st, say, this Michaelis thing isn't working. Matthews looks great. We're going all in on Matthews. The implications of that be darned. We're going to eat the Michaelis money. And we're going to go to Quinn Matthews. If J.J. Weatherholt is just awesome 3 months into the season, 4 months into the season, and it looks like he is every piece of a big leaguer. Are they ready to make that move right then, right there, no matter what the cost might be in terms of the player that you have to move on from? Now, a lot of these things will figure themselves out because you have injuries and things like that. When we talk about the starting rotation not having room right now for Michael McGreevy, that's probably going to work itself out because very rarely, you know where I'm going, I say this a million times, very rarely do you walk out of spring training with the five projected starters. Right now, the five projected starters for the Cardinals, if they were to play, if opening day was tomorrow and everything was the way it is right now, the rotation is Gray, Fetty, Pallante, Michaelis, Mats. There's no room for McGreevy. Now, in all likelihood, one of those five guys, maybe more than one of those five guys, won't be available on opening day. Last year was Sonny Gray who missed the start of the season. Like, guys miss the start of the season. It's a very common thing for starting pitchers to have issues. But they in a year where you're trying to figure out what you have, it doesn't really feel like right now the doors are open. And things can change. And I'm internally curious, are they ready to kind of go to the next era of Cardinals baseball right now? It worked well for Mason Wynn. Mason Wynn was given a job last year. I know he got a little bit of big league time the year before, but he wasn't overly impressive, especially from an offensive standpoint. They gave him the keys to shortstop, and it worked out pretty well for him. Now, they had a contingency plan. That's why they went and got Brandon Crawford. And I've always argued that Crawford actually played a little bit better than people feel like he played. When you look at his numbers and some things, there's a way to look at it. But still, he wasn't needed. He was an unnecessary piece on that roster, and eventually they made the decision to move on from him. Are they going to be willing to make the decision in season this year to move on from guys? If a starting pitcher is struggling and you've got Michael McGreevy and maybe Gordon Graceffo and certainly Quinn Matthews ready to go, are you ready to just wash your hands? You can't trade Miles Michaelis, you get rid of him. Maybe you can't trade Steven Matz, you just move on from him. Are they willing to do those things this year? Setting yourself more up for 2026 than 2025 because it's the opportunity to see those guys pitch every fifth day in the big leagues. Are they ready? If J.J. Weatherholt is looking good, are they ready to hand him the keys to second base at some point this year? If Tink Hintz is just, if he gets to AAA this year, and I could be wrong on this, and I know the Cardinals continue to talk about Tink in terms of being a starting pitcher, I still have a really hard time seeing how he makes the jump to being a big league starter right away when you look at his innings. He was around 75 this past year of innings. His season before, I think he was at 97. That's a career high for him. He has not thrown the amount of innings that you need a guy to have thrown in the minor leagues to feel like he can be a starter. So is there a scenario where you get Hintz up and you just put him in the bullpen and it costs somebody else their job? Like, are they willing to make those decisions with the young players to give them opportunities in 2025 that more than anything else is going to set you up for 2026? If they're not very good this year, it actually makes it a pretty easy decision. If you're 15 games under 500 and you're 10 games out of a playoff spot, you don't need to run Miles Michaelis out every fifth day. You just don't. It's the same situation with lot of other guys. There's not a whole lot of value in that. But what would be interesting is, what if you're playing some pretty good baseball? What if you're right there in playoff contention, right there in divisional contention, right there, but you've got some veteran pieces that are not performing the way you would like them to perform, and some of these young players, who it might be a little early for them if we're being honest about it, but in a year where you talk about runway and in a year where you say you need to learn about your young players, in many ways it would be logical to bring those guys up. Do they get that opportunity? And I think that's going to be one of the things that I'm really looking out for this year. We'll see how it all plays out for sure. But I do think it's worth mentioning. just keep an eye on this for tonight. We'll see if anything happens before all is said and done. But this Ryan Pressly thing really seems to be picking up. Different insiders are reporting Cubs and Tigers, and that the Astros have gone to Pressly to see who he would waive his no trade clause for, whether he'd be willing to go to the Cubs, whether he'd be willing to go to the Tigers. If you stay with the Astros, so if you don't invoke your no trade clause, you're the setup guy. You don't get to be a closer. If you go to the Cubs or you go to the Tigers, you're going to make less money because you have to pay more state income tax, but you're going to get the opportunity to be a closer. And no matter where you're at, you know, Houston, Detroit, or Chicago, you're going to be on a team that has playoff aspirations. All three of those teams have aspirations to be a playoff team this year. So I'll be curious to see how that plays out and where Pressly would rather go. If they've got deals done basically with Detroit and Chicago, if he would rather be a Cub or if he would rather be a Tiger. Up next, we're going to talk with our good friend Kevin Wheeler. We always do a Friday conversation with him, kind of looking back at the week that was in the baseball storylines. Wheels is going to join us coming up in just a moment here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we do start to wrap up this Friday edition as we get into the final half hour of the program. It is our Friday tradition, our Friday conversation with our good friend Kevin Wheeler, former host of this program. You hear him on the Dave Glover Show, and here he is right now. Hi, Kevin.
Sup, bro?
How's it going?
I don't know why I said it like that. Everything's good, man. Everything's good. Heading into a good weekend.
You're not really a sup, bro.
No, guy. I'm definitely not, no. Which is why I was more done ironically. And then I realized how dumb it sounded.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So it's been a week where we have spent the week talking through the narratives that came into existence during winter warm-up. And then nothing really has happened beyond that. I still think it's really interesting. And it's been talked about ad nauseum on this show and on this station and everywhere. But I continue to think that it's a really big deal that John Mozeliak said that they no longer feel the pressure to reduce payroll even if they don't trade Nolan Arenado. And that could mean a few things. It could mean that they actually really think they're just going to get this Arenado deal done and it's a way to appease fans. It could just be what it is and doesn't mean anything more than that. It could mean that they really feel like this team has a chance to be better than everybody's talking about. But I feel like there's something underneath that statement from Mo.
Yeah, I would agree. Maybe it is a feeling that you kind of know what it'll take to get a deal done with an approved team, right? With an Arenado approved team, and just haven't gotten to that point yet where you're willing to concede as right. much as you might need to concede. Maybe it's that. Maybe it is just they've had more time to get their hands around what the financial situation is going to be, and they realize, okay, we're going to be fine, and we don't want to gut because there's not that many places to save money, man. I mean, you know, you could try to move Steven Matz. I'm guessing they've tried, and I'm guessing they've not had very many receptive offers. That would be, them not eating money. I'm sure they don't want to eat money on that. I know they're very fond of starting pitching depth, which I understand. But I do wonder if they should stop talking about maybe being better than you think. Because the reason I say it is this. I think they should think that. I think that should be a part of their thought process. Because it's possible. We've talked about the scenarios yeah. where they could be better than they were last year, and it wouldn't be crazy to see it. But, and I want to put this the right way, it's not going to sell tickets. No, you're not selling more tickets because a fan base hears you say, well, we might be better than you think.
Right.
The people will buy more tickets if they see it. Right. This is a fan base that's used to a message that is, we're a contender. We're working to make the playoffs. That's how we roll. And I don't think, though, and I could be completely wrong about this. I've done zero market research, but I've been in sports radio now in December. Next December will be 30 years for me in sports talk radio. I have talked to I don't know how many thousands of sports fans on the air, off the air. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say that they bought tickets based on off-season messaging.
No, never.
You're buying based on what you've seen happen. So when you've seen the Cardinals contending Yes, that's going to lead to excitement in the offseason. That's going to lead, man, it wasn't that long ago, man, where the Cardinals announcing their packages, their 10-game packs and their season ticket packs and, you know, the different, you know, promotional things was like a big deal.
Right.
Because people were dying to get their hands on it. Well, you're not going to sell anybody on any of those things with the message that, hey, you know, we might not be so bad. So maybe just don't go there, because I know we talked about this a bit this during the week on the Gas House Gang, we being you and me, but also just the group of us, that sometimes what gets the Cardinals in trouble is messaging. It's not always what they do. It's not always what they spend. Sometimes it's messaging, like saying things that you don't need to say, or saying things that people that are sports writers, that are sports radio hosts, that are fans are going to see and they're going to remember it. And then they're going to be like, you said this. Why didn't this happen?
Yeah.
And this is not an egregious thing like right now, like the whole, you know, we might be better. But if you're selling everybody on a reset, that message conflicts with, well, we don't want to do anything that'll really undercut our ability to compete. And because those two, it's not that you're doing a tank. We're not talking about a tank job. You want to be competitive. But really, if you traded one starting pitcher,
not the
is it
world.
Really going to change your picture that much?
Not much.
Especially when you're talking about...
Unless it's Sonny Gray.
But especially when you're talking about... Right, right. And I don't think it should be him.
Right.
You know, I'm talking more of the Steven Matz, maybe Eric Fetty, right? But Fetty's good, so I understand wanting to give yourself that chance to you know, all right, we get into June, we're not that bad. So I get that, but I'm not sure that should outweigh achieving the other goals that we've talked about. Clearing paths for younger players to show you. Because the more you know, using the rotation as an example, the more you know about Gordon Graceffo and Michael McGreevy and eventually Quinn Matthews, the more you know about those guys at the end of this year, the better off you are to actually turn around and become that contender again under Heim Bloom.
So you said a few things there that I want to get into. First off, I agree with the messaging has been interesting, but even if you get into what's being said, not directly. So when the announcement is basically made that they don't have to make another move if they don't trade Arenado, and the idea was out there that, well, if you don't trade Arenado, you have to move on from Helsley, you have to move on from Fetty. There was almost this reaction from the organization of, like, that's just silly. Why would we ever move on from Eric Fetty? Why would we ever move on from Ryan Helsley? What are you talking about? That would not be good for the organization. So to me, I think that right there is a more powerful statement of an organization believing that they're going to be at least respectable this year, as opposed to them going out and saying the whole, well, we might be better. Again, it has nothing to do with tickets. It has nothing to do with any of these things. But when they sit there and say out loud, we think we might be better than the outside world thinks that we're going to be, something in my head says, do they believe that? Or
I think they do.
Or are they trying to sell tickets? When they balk at the idea of trading Ryan Helsley, we're obviously in the middle of a reset, a rebuild, whatever you want to call it. Trading Ryan Helsley would be fantastic for the organization for future purposes. When they act like that's the craziest thing in the world, I think that carries weight as an organization believing that they're going to be all right this year.
So I think I don't remember if it was you or Bernie or Tom when we talked about this on Monday. No, it's Tom. The real big reset is with how they're doing business in the player development system.
Sure.
Like, that's the big reset. And the stuff at the major league level is more of a soft reset. It's not a massive change, right? It's going to be a couple of spots different. So if you trade Nolan Arenado, it's like two guys that are different from last year, right? Two spots. Goldschmidt's gone and Arenado's gone. So maybe the new guys are, you know, Pajes and Herrera while Contreras is also playing. And then, like, Sejacy sliding into the mix. But, I mean, Gorman's been a regular. Donovan's been a regular. Newt Barr's been a regular. Obviously, Jordan Walker would be the one that's going to be the new regular. He's not a new guy, but he's the new one where they're like, okay, we're going to let him play. We have to let him play. We got to stop with this nonsense of, you know, sending him down every time he has a bad month. So there's not it's not like it's a dramatic changeover on the roster. And, again, I do think they can be better. I don't think it's crazy.
No.
I don't think it's crazy at all because you have Fetty all year. You know, he's better than all the other guys were last year, maybe outside of Palante. I don't know exactly what Palante is. He may be what he was last year. He may be a little less than that, but I know he's probably going to be near there. You know, I don't know what Miles is going to be. I don't know what Matz is going to be or if he's going to be healthy. We don't know what McGreevy will look like when he's in there. And those are the things you're going to need to sort through. The bullpen's largely the same, minus Kittredge, but it's the same other than that. And the lineup, as we pointed out, is kind of the same, depending on which way you go on a couple of decisions. So is it crazy to look at that and say, well, if you have Contreras healthy, he doesn't have a broken arm when he's catching. If, you know, if Nolan Gorman is just what he was in 2023 instead of what he was for. And again, you know, he was only bad last year for about 28 games.
Right. He was just really
bad. He was just really bad. Yeah. Yeah. It was basically a zero for the Lions score for a month. It was really bad. And I know some of the reason they sent him out was just because he was mentally struggling with it. Not as much, not just that you got to go work on things. But what if Jordan Walker's just fine? What if he's an average major league hitter or maybe slightly above average? All of these things, you could be better, because that's what Arenado was. He was only about an average hitter last year. Goldie was only a little bit better than average. So it's not like you can't replicate that. You definitely can. I just wouldn't want to talk about it too much, because I think it conflicts a little bit with what you just said is kind of the longer term picture. So as an example, if everything goes well, boy, you're going to really be happy that you have Ryan Helsley.
Yes.
Because that's going to help you win games. So if you get to June and July and you're like, man, we're only four games out, we may be at a piece because we can do that. And he's our closer. We've got this awesome closer, and then we can do the QO if we want in the offseason, which is a lot for a closer, but you know, for 1 year, not the end of the world. But what if his elbow barks at him in spring training? And you end up getting to the point where, like, yeah, we're not going to get anything for him.
But you know what? I would put that under the same category of, what if Nolan Gorman looks exactly the same way he did for his final month? And
except that you would be trading Helsley if you did. You're not going to, but if you traded him this offseason, you're trading him at his peak value, right? Because he's coming off a great year. It's a full season for a team. And again, too late in the process to even think of it now. But if you were talking about that 2 months ago, you probably get a hell of a return. You'd be trading low on Gorman.
Yeah, but my point is, you're going to get nothing for either one of them in that situation, and I'm not going to be bothered by either.
Okay.
That's the point that I'm trying to make.
I think there'll be some people that'll second guess it. I probably won't, because I get it, because there's also the chance that his value could be higher at the deadline. If he's having another great year and somebody's desperate, somebody's like, man, we can win the World Series this year. We need this guy.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the return for Devin Williams, and like, I think the Brewers did well.
I thought so too.
For where they're at.
Right. They wanted a starting pitcher, and they got one.
So they were able to accomplish things that they did. So this is not me trashing what the Brewers did. But if you're going to put a value upon the total package received for Williams, and whether you want to convert that total value to prospects if you're trying to trade Ryan Helsley as opposed to some big league guys, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more for Helsley than what the Brewers got.
Yeah. I mean, if you were shooting for prospects, you would have gotten more. I mean, but you got a major league pitcher when you're trying to win the division who can help you do that. And they already know that McGill can close. He just did it for most of this past season and, you know, kept you in contention. So it is fascinating. And I mean, you know, we're only a couple weeks away from spring training now, so we're going to start getting answers pretty soon.
So here's my conspiracy theory.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if I believe it.
You got your foil hat?
Yes, I do. I don't even know if I believe it, but I'm going to throw it out there. All right. Throw it into the universe. So when, you know, John Mozeliak obviously said at the winter meetings, our intention is to trade Nolan Arenado. Then he tells us on KMOX a few weeks ago, we thought we had a deal done. Probably was the Houston deal. Might have been something else.
Right,
we don't know.
Probably that.
Probably was the Houston deal. And Mo also said, you know, if I knew then what I knew now, maybe I wouldn't have said it that way. Well, what has he said since then? He said on stage the other day, intention number one, two, and three, or plan one, two, and three, is to trade Arenado. So my conspiracy theory that I'll throw out in the universe is that the Cardinals basically have the framework of deals done with multiple teams that are in on Bregman, and then once Bregman goes somewhere, there's going to be some teams left over, and the Cardinals are very confident that they're going to be able to move Arenado in one of those spots.
I think that's probably correct. And in tandem with that, I think it's probably also true that if they don't have frameworks for agreements in place, I think they probably know what it takes to get it done.
Sure.
They know how much money they would have to agree to eat to get a deal done.
Why would you say the 1, 2, 3, you know, plans 1, 2, and 3 when you've already said, ah, maybe I shouldn't have said that, the winner meet. Like, yeah, there has to be more there.
I mean, and also it's plan one, but plan 2 and 3 could be those other minor things you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and there may be some players that get left behind where you can get some good deals. You know, I mean, like, look at last year as an example. This guy's not going to be the specific guy. But, like, last year, the Padres snapped up Jurickson Profar right before spring training for $1 million. Like, there are going to be some players out there that you can get super cheap that don't have jobs that maybe they add to your bullpen. Maybe you find that. I don't know where that right-handed bat is they were talking about, but maybe you find one of those guys. Maybe it's an Austin Hayes. Maybe it's an Austin Hayes who's looking for an opportunity to get at-bats. I don't know where you get them here because you're just jumping into a mix where we're already trying to clear at-bats. But like the point is, I think there's a chance that that comes up too. But those would be more plans, you know, 2 and 3 after 1. But 1 is definitely moving Nolan.
They're going to sign a relief pitcher who's going to be a high leverage guy.
I would think at the very least, like somebody that would be like where Kittredge was last year, which was maybe there's a question about something. Maybe it's health. Maybe it's whatever. But because that was what it was with Kittredge. He had been hurt the year before most of the year. So it's why he got the 1 year deal at a moderate salary. And I'm sure it'll be something similar in structure.
Speaking of question marks, and I really like JoJo Romero, but I think there is still a bit of a question mark on him because
stuff really changed at the end of last year.
It did. So first half of the season was incredible, then fell back. I think it was due to usage. So hopefully they use him a little bit less.
I mean, if you look at the first half,
every day it seemed like he was out there.
He and Kittredge were like on pace for like 80 appearances,
which you can't do. And he went through a lull. They didn't use him very much. And then he kind of popped back up at the end of the season. But even things like his strikeout numbers never completely recovered.
No. I think that's a legit worry. But, you know, he's not super expensive. It's, you know, he's a guy you definitely want to find out about. Because when you got lefties that can reach, you know, 96, 97 miles an hour. And, you know, he does get the ball on the ground a good bit. Mm-hmm. If he can just get back to missing the bats again. Like he did the first half of last year, that's a pretty good asset that you might end up trading at the deadline.
Yeah, really good asset. Kevin, always good to see you.
All right, appreciate you, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. Of course, be tuned in. The Gas House Gang, Kevin and I are part of it, along with Tom Ackerman and Bernie Miklas. We do it live every day at 12 noon across the KMOX sports social media channels. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the program in just a moment. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I'm going to do something here that I don't like to do very often. When I listen to other things or watch things on TV, one of the things that irks me is when people speak on things that they're not super educated on, and I always try not to do that because my goal in all of this, I can say dumb things. I realize that, but my goal is to limit the amount of dumb things that I say, and I try to do that in large part by only talking about things that I have a little bit of an education on. And I saw something on the STL today, and I haven't really been able to do a deep dive on it beyond reading the article that's posted. So I actually thought long and hard today about whether or not I wanted to discuss this. But the optics of something and just the fact that something has to happen, it really bugged me. And this is involving Vashon High School. So Vashon High School basketball, once again, as they tend to be, are very good. And St. Louis Public Schools, the officials at that school have decided that they are going to limit the number of people and really the type of people that are able to attend varsity basketball games. And the decision was announced yesterday. It's going on right now from what we understand. So what they're doing is only players, coaches, referees, and parents are allowed to attend basketball games at Vashon. So siblings, and I read in part from this Post-Dispatch article, which was written by Blythe Bernard, who covers the she's not a sports writer, she's a education reporter, and does a, there's been a few things here in the last few months with St. Louis Public Schools, with the busing and the superintendent stuff and the credit cards and all that sort of thing. She's been busy. She has been busy covering St. Louis Public Schools. I don't think she had it on her bingo card that she was going to essentially become a sports reporter, but that's where she's at. So, according to her story, with this ruling, siblings, other students at the school, and college scouts are all unable to attend Vashon basketball home games. And the reason that they're doing this, is very warranted. Very warranted. They're doing this for safety reasons, because there have been fights and some other things. They referred to it as a difficult decision in a statement, but there were fights at a basketball invitational that was held Monday at Cardinal Ritter, and there were no arrests in it, but that led to some things here as well. All right, so I've got a few thoughts on this just based off, and if I've got something wrong, you can text into the program or let me know on Twitter or something, but I'm just going based off the information. I appreciate the decision makers being worried about the safety of the student athletes and just trying to avoid any type of violent behavior. That is a good motivation. I want to start with that. The motivation for this decision that they made is a good motivation. The decision is made in the interest of safety. Okay, cool. That's what you did. I understand it. I'm not trying to be completely dismissive of that. There has to be a better way. There has to be a better way. And we can say this about a lot of things that happen, unfortunately, in St. Louis, sports and beyond, where you just get the sense that the people who are making the decisions don't get it. Don't get it. And I'm not proposing that they just open up the doors and let whatever happen because everybody should be able to come watch a basketball game. I'm not being dismissive of the safety concerns. And I'm also not being dismissive of the fact that you're probably very limited in how many St. Louis police officers or whatever you use can be there when it is well documented that that there's not a lot of police officers out there, right? Like, so I'm not being dismissive of that either. But you got to do better. You got to do better. Sports are so often the front door of any institution, whether we're talking college sports, whether we're talking prep sports. The experience of extracurricular activities includes being able to play a Friday night basketball game and have a packed gym and have that environment going for you. Like that's an important part of the educational process. And I know this is a sports show. I know it is. I realize it. And maybe I shouldn't be talking about this, but I am. That's an important part of the educational process. I've always believed very, very strongly that athletics, very few of these kids, and maybe for Vashon basketball, this isn't true because of how good they are. But in the grand scheme of things, when you talk about high school athletes, very few of these kids are going on to play sports after high school. And an even smaller percentage are going on to play sports after high school at any level of significance. So you got these kids who are going to practice every day. They're staying eligible, so they're doing all right from a grade standpoint. They're probably doing better than a lot of the other kids at that school. They're doing everything that they need to do. And now you as a St. Louis public school, or you as administrators at Vashon, wherever this decision comes down from, you're going to make the decision to take away the experience of athletics and everything that goes along with it. Again, I realize you got to keep the kids safe, but there's got to be a better way. And It's not my money, but if you got to go get private security, go get private security. Find a way to pay for it, right? Like, you got no problem spending money on your credit cards to upgrade your flights to first class and to stay at high-level hotels and do all these things that the people in the administration of St. Louis Public Schools have been doing for a while and they're looking at. You're doing all those things. How much is it actually going to cost to go get some private security and bring it in so you can preserve a really good high school basketball team being able to play in front of fans? And don't even forget the fact that, you know, college scouts, things like that, they can't come in. How much does it stink if you've got a kid and their younger brother or their younger sister who really looks up to them can't go watch them play basketball? Like, this is ridiculous. This is one of the dumbest things I have ever seen. And it shows the problem somewhere that instead of being creative, instead of being forward-thinking, instead of realizing the importance of this, you just, you know what, let's make the easy decision and let's just close it off to everybody. We'll just close it off to everybody. Because we're not going to take the time, we're not going to take the effort, we're not going to spend the money to find a way to make sure that it can be a safe environment. You can't keep a high school basketball gym safe. You can't keep a high school basketball gym safe. Somehow, some way. What does that say about you? What does that say about you? I'm a little fired up about this one. It really bothers me. It just really bothers me because I'm a big believer in the experiences of athletics. No matter what level we're talking about, the experiences of athletics, and anytime those experiences are messed with, I get upset. And I'm upset right here, so shame. Shame. Shame on St. Louis Public Schools officials. Shame on the folks of Vashon High School. Shame on everybody involved in this decision. Shows absolutely zero outside-the-box thinking and absolutely zero effort to fix the problem. You're not fixing the problem. You're just closing off the problem. That's dumb. That's dumb. Let the kids play basketball in front of people. This is not the thing that should be going away because you don't know how to keep things safe. That's all I'm saying. And on that happy note, that's how we're going to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Certainly appreciate you being with us this evening. Don't go anywhere. We've got the Gas House Gang on the way next. You get more of me. Today it's me and Bernie Miklas on the show. So that is up next. And have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you again coming up on Monday for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.